The next subject is the private equity opportunity.
Yes, we have, of course, Richard's had some discussions with the committee in the past and felt like it was appropriate to bring forward again another opportunity to discuss with the committee and the private equity. As you all know, and he'll say, we in our current policy, we allow for, we have a target of 5% in private equity. We have nothing in private equity right now. We have a target of 5% and a range of 0 to 10%. So we're certainly within our range, but we're not at the target. And so I think Richard wanted to talk about the pros and cons of private equity, specifically with this particular opportunity. So I'll turn it over to Richard to talk about. And also, by the way, if there was a decision to go into private equity at some point, that would come from, and I was opening this, it would come from the domestic. I mean, unless the committee wanted to change something, it'd come out of the domestic large cap. It'd come out of the BBH. Would be where the funds would come from if there was a thing. Unless, again, there was some other decision made, but just the way the allocation is set up in the policy, it shows that the 30% you were talking about that's with BBH would come down to 25%. 25% and the 5% would go to private equity as an example. So anyway, there you go. Yes.
Well, you know, or it could be a combination of BBH and Royce Premier, but it definitely
could be. That's what I'm saying. The committee could decide. I mean, right. What's the right?
Right. And I pulled a few pages from the report that we posted from Permal. Permal is a what do you want to call a manager of managers. They basically select and put together funds of various private equity general partners. So there's a significant amount of diversification in everything that they do. It's not one strategy. It covers a significant horizon. What we're primarily looking at here, and what I thought would be interesting to talk to the committee about, and hopefully it is well received, is that they have a new fund in the market in what they call their equity opportunity strategy. It is a fund of secondary funds. That is, what they're trying to do is provide liquidity to various holders of funds that, for one reason or another, want to get out. It may be that they're terribly over-allocated because of the recent performance of private equity. It may be they need the cash. There are a multitude of reasons, but one of the things that has happened over the last decade is a significant increase in the secondary space. And it's becoming more and more utilized, if you will, by plan sponsors to balance their overall private equity positions. They may find that they're overweighted in a particular strategy, so they want to bring in a different strategy, so they sell off part of a holding that they have. What that does is, from the standpoint of the secondary fund and the investors in the secondary fund, is it provides them with access to funds that are already invested. So they're not, subject to, if you will, saying, okay, here, we're going to commit to this particular fund and then wait for several years for that to start getting invested on them while they're paying a fee based on what they said they would commit. And so there are a couple of things that happen. One, you start getting some sort of returns much sooner because the underlying funds have been around for maybe 5 or 6 years or 2 or 3 years, whatever it happens to be. And two, you start getting, you know, an income flow out of that investment. I don't know if you had a chance to really look through the overall presentation, but like I said, I passed out a few pages that I had pulled out, printed off, that we could go through. The first one is page one. They, you know, Primal itself, they're in Boston, is a well-known manager in the space. And over the last 14 years, they've raised over $1.3 billion that has been invested in secondary funds. This is their fifth secondary fund. They tend to work at the small end of the marketplace. They're not the mega fund size type of things, and there are some secondary managers that will raise like $5 or $6 billion to go into the secondary market. What that does for them is that puts them in a class where they're involved in not private negotiated deals, but in a sale and a bid process, which tends to tell you they most likely are going to overpay. Because the guy who says they'll pay the most usually gets the deal, not all the time. But small funds, I think, make a lot more sense from two standpoints. Number one, you can have private negotiated deals. Number two, the smaller end of the market space in private equity tends to have better long-term returns than the higher, you know, size area of private equity. The Primal team has been around for quite a long time and have worked together for a long time. Red Barrett, who runs the operation, is a very, very experienced man in private equity, evaluating various general partners. On the bottom of this page, they've got a very good, strong track record, 15.3% net IRR. That's, you know, internal rate of return on gross, and then net of 11.2.
Where did you see that, Richard? I kept looking for returns, and I just overlooked it somewhere.
Well, if you go on page, there are several pages I pulled out. And on page four, they're talking about the prior fund, which shows
31% gross IRR.
Right. Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport is in this fund. Another client of...
We'd be a limited partner.
Yes.
And that would be 24%.
Yes.
Net to IRR to the limited partners in that case.
Right.
This says
now that's going to accrete down as we are.
Well, this said, this key terms on the last page 29 says a preferred return of 8%.
That's correct.
Ledger's guaranteed return. So
that it's not guaranteed, but all of the private equity space is primarily based on there's a fee. I try and tell people that, you know, the fee, it's really not a fee, it's an operating advance, because if there's a preferred return, you get back whatever you put in, plus your fee, and then you get that return before they get to come in for their quote-unquote carry, and that's where they make their money.
Yeah, it's got a 10% carry in it, I know.
Right, and that's after you get your 8% internal rate of return. Once you get that, then they start, picking up their 10% carry. So it's to their, quote unquote, if you will, advantage to make sure you get it. And the other thing is that they're saying, okay, we're going to give you long periods of time. People are expecting the stock market to do 8%. I don't know. It seems to always generally come down to around 8%. And so they say, okay, we'll give you the stock market return, but after that, we want a share of the profits.
Since the general partner, which would be the capital management,
yes,
put 1% in or 4.5 million.
Right.
Will they keep that in the whole time?
Yes. Okay. It goes in along with each time there's a capital call, their portion goes into that capital call. And that will stay in. The thing is right now, like they've got put in 1.5%, they've got another one in fund four, they got in fund three and fund two. So it mounts up from their standpoint, but they've always got skin in the game. That's the other thing that, quite frankly, I like about private equity is that
there's a reason why there's a lot of demand for these to be traded, as you pointed out, endowments, government entities that have invested in them. And the interesting thing I would make note to the committee about is this. They're selling at a discount. The underlying investment partnership interest is selling at a discount, and that's what we'd be buying it at.
Right.
And that's the advantage, I guess, that really steps up. I applaud the strategy here, but we got to remember that the underlying investment was discounted for a reason.
Liquidity primarily.
And it's primarily.
And if allocation, we really don't know what the reason is. And,
What is our liquidity position if we had an interest in this? What if we looked up and said, hey, we want to sell it or whatever?
There's a marketplace for it now. I would say 20 years ago there wasn't a marketplace for it. Now there is a marketplace for it. But like I say, if you're going to sell it, you're most likely going to be selling at a
discount.
Some of these do sell pretty much at market. Valuation, because the guy who's buying it looks at it and says, wow, I like this, and maybe he's got some knowledge of the underlying portfolio and says, I'll pay your current holding value.
Take again, let's say that okay, this made sense. Take me through the life of that investment. In other words, let's say we put $1 million in. What happens over the next five, 10 years?
And right now...
I don't know what it is.
I agree. If in this particular instance, in general, so if they... that right now they have maybe 15 to 20% of the fund has already been invested. So day one, you go and you sign your commitment, $1 million. Within a week or two, you're going to get a capital call for 20% of that, and whatever true up for people who have already been in for 7 or 8 months, and you'll be paying a little bit of an interest factor to them because they get put up the money so to make the investments to begin with. So you have a capital call. Then over the next 3 years, you'd expect about a third of the remaining capital to be called. That is
$300,000 a year.
$300,000 a year. Yeah, it's going to be lumpy, but yeah, in general, that's the deal.
But it could have all happened at once. Too.
It could be short. Then after like the first year and or since this fund has already been invested for a number of months, within a month you may get a distribution back for the gains that have been realized for selling and or income that came out of those other investment. And on a quarterly basis, there most likely will be some sort of distribution, minor distributions, that tend to get larger over the next several years. So you may put in 20% and then another 30% or whatever. So 50% is in the first year and a half. Also, over that time frame, you may get a 10 or 15% of it back from the standpoint of gains that have been, underlying gains that have been made. At the end of 3 years, you should have had your contributions made, possibly could drag out to five, because they're also a captive of what the GP is that they bought. When they call capital, they have to, you know, make those capital calls, so they'll call from you. So it could take 5 years. But after the end of 5 years, you should be in a distribution mode where all of a sudden you're getting more and more back. It peaks and it comes down. Fund four, when it had its final close, last time they were about 50% invested, and they had underlying gains of like 20% or something like that. So when the final close happened, the week after the final close, there was a capital call for about 50% of the commitment. There was a distribution within 30 days of 20% of the capital call that was gains. So there was basically no J-curve effect from this type of investment. I mean, I don't know.
Let me ask this, Richard. On the capital calls, would we be limited to the total amount of commitment, or would we be subject to future capital calls that are unlimited?
No, you wouldn't. Your only thing would be whatever your commitment is. Now, a capital call that occurs within a 1 year time frame, let's say they made a capital call for $200,000 and it went to a specific underlying fund. They put that money to work. If they turn around within a year and send it back along with gains, then or without gains, and the underlying asset is still there functioning, but they sent your capital back because they financed it at 2 or 3% or something, and why should they hold on to your capital for that? Then that is recalled. But the only way it's recallable, and so you'd pay more, is if you won't pay more because you got it back. But you would have the only commitment you have is for that $2 million.
This says closing date June of 15. So this particular pool, they're saying, is going to close on June of 15. And they've got $217 million of it.
We can extend commitments it
now.
Well, they have. They extended it. Which where? Which page?
I want the last page, 29.
Deal steel facts. Key facts.
Key terms. Yeah. What's the minimum?
They'll let us in for $1 million. Although I think the published minimum is five. But if you want to have $1 million worth of exposure, you need to make a $2 million commitment because of what we just described about
flow, inflow,
and outflow. So, okay. And it's an 8-year term, which most of them tend to be 10 years. So that somewhat compresses. Is this the page you were talking about?
Yeah.
The GP is going to put in $4.5 million. The fund size they're targeting is $450 million. I'm still now trying.
Down at the very bottom says closing date.
Oh, next close plans for June. So sometime in June, they're expecting to have another, and it probably towards the end of June, another close for new entrants into the fund.
Okay.
They have a number of people who have signed up and said, hey, here's my subscription agreement. And when they have the close, right behind that is when the funds would flow.
Well, when is the beginning of this fund? When is the start for the three-year period, the three-year investment period? What was the beginning period?
The beginning would be from the date of the first close, which was, I believe, last September.
Okay. So last fall. So 2017 could go through, and it could go another year with the committee's approval.
Right. Well, that's right.
It could go through 18 if there's an extension. So is the LLC general partner? I mean, that's going to be the manager.
That's the general partner, yeah. Permal Private Equity Opportunities 5 Limited Liability Corporation.
Well, Permal is being hired by the general partner to run it. Is that correct?
Well, Permal is the
manager.
Is the manager. But the general partner of...
They've been hired by the general partner to
manage
it for them. That would have to be the agreement to delegate that general partner for you.
Well, they are. I don't know why they put general partner up there. Why didn't just Permal Private Equity Opportunities 5, the general partner is PPO 5 LLC, which is all of the people at the beginning of this. Which worked for Permal, I guess, you know, they may... I'm not a lawyer, so I'm kind of trying to...
Well, they're shielding themselves through the LLC.
Right.
The partner.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They put it in there as a general partner, and then they get delegated.
They separate this fund out from the other fund, so you don't have...
So really, I mean, here's part of the concerns I would have, Richard. It's a pretty, from an investment standpoint, of course, I'm a banker by background, so. But from an investment standpoint of our employees' money and retirement trust assets, this is a pretty wild investment, in my opinion. And I'm not saying it's a bad investment. I'm saying it's, in the world of investments, there's not a regulatory authority.
They're registered with the SEC. There is a regulatory.
Okay, but this particular activity is, there's no public place we can go. Here is the financial statement that's audited, correct?
You get annual audited statements, and you get quarterly capital accounts.
Okay, so they do.
Yes, there's an audit. There's a what they call an advisory committee, which is made up of the larger plan, the larger entities that invested in this fund, like Houston is going to be one of them. They'll be on that advisory committee. The state of Ohio is a very large investor with them.
I just think that then when you drill down to the actual, where is the money going, what's it doing? You know, that's really where we're investing. We're investing a lot of these guys' expertise to buy the right ones at
right.
the discount rate.
Right.
Because that's where the profit is. But
that's right.
But the underlying private equity investment, you know, you have to remember, and everybody needs to know, that that's usually a high return investment that's now being sold for a discount because of liquidity concerns. Or they haven't met their goals. They may have underperformed one time and caused somebody to be reactive and get out. But it's usually involved in a transaction where there's senior debt ahead of that investor, And there's other types of financing that typically and often is ahead of those private equity investors. And there's a lot of risk in it, what I'm trying to say. That's why there's a lot of return to the investors. That's why there's venture capital returns for this private equity.
Well, the primary risk appears in this thing is, quite frankly, the liquidity risk. If you have, if you for some reason you've overinvested in the space, you have too much of it, that's a big risk. One of the things that we talked about, I think, we first were looking at private equity was from the standpoint of how companies are managed. Private equity companies tend to have better management and better results than public companies. Private, companies, there was a number of things that people say, well, private equity is more risky. They default less frequently than public companies. They're much more stable than public companies. I mean,
That may be true. It may not be true for the particular investments, Richard. The point is that they're having to raise capital to do a transaction, and they're paying a higher rate than typical finance rates. So it is a facility for the businesses. The ones I've seen, it's usually a facility to accommodate what leverage needs to be in place. And the ownership, typically, a lot of these private capital guys, they don't spend any money, and they raise it all. And then they go do their transaction. And, they're often pretty good transactions. They work out real well, but they're going outside to raise their own, what should be their own equity. And it's a very expensive facility if somebody is an owner. You see what I'm getting at?
Right.
It's one of the more expensive facilities. And there's been so much dialogue and chatter about private equity. What is private equity? It can be anything under the sun, actually. It can be anything under the sun, really. And there's all kinds of private equity companies out there doing business, and it's wide open. In other words, it's kind of wide open.
Right. Well, one of the things that's really over the last 20 years, anyway, one of the big transitions in the private equity space has been quarterly mark-to-market requirement, the annual audit requirement, the registration requirement with the SEC. These guys are no longer, quite frankly, in their little ivory tower, being able to shield themselves from oversight, and that's a big thing. In the old days, when it was just private equity working with high net worth families, they didn't want, quite frankly, any type of mark to market in the interim. They just leave it at cost, and then when I get my money back, I get my money back, because I don't want to have to deal with a tax man. But that, from the standpoint of institutions, is a big thing, because especially with those of us who are trying to generate long-term returns, one of the things that I really, a number of things I like about private equity. I mean, overall rolling 10-year periods, it's outperformed public equity, period. There is just not one time frame when that hadn't happened. It's much, much more stable. I mean, you get less than 50% of the volatility in private equity than you do in public equity.
Can I ask you a question, though? But how are you getting your information? Where are you getting your information on private equity? Because a lot of the private equity entities that I'm talking about, they're not giving you that information on what they're doing. So which information are you getting to say that this is outperforming?
Oh,
where's your index coming from?
from Cambridge Institute, which gathers information on all of the private managers out there and puts that data. I mean, they have to publish information now. I mean, you don't, and every...
Well, if it's required, if it's qualified SEC,
right.
Then it's got to be. I can see that. But
a lot of them aren't. They're smaller.
Anybody else smaller. Question?
Yeah.
Anybody else? We want to read the motion. Is there one?
Well, only if we put a potential resolution in here to put that up there just so they can see it. You have to put it up just so you can see. But it was really to, you know, execute an agreement.
Okay.
With.
In other words, if
I mean, it was,
well,
if we want to do it.
If we want to do it, yeah.
I don't have a number. I can put a number in there, too. Of course, Richard's talking about if you're to sort of do a 5%, that's a million. But as you said, you really potentially might have to commit. I mean, you can commit to whatever we want, what the committee wants.
In general, fund of funds really only had, and this is a fund of funds, although it's a secondary fund, it is a fund of other funds. Which gives you significant diversification. Because each one of the underlying funds, if they own 10 of them, each one of those underlying funds have like 10 investments. So you're looking at 100, you know, portfolio investments. And, you know, I did say, yeah, I got the data on some of this stuff, but it does add a diversifying factor. It does increase expected return. And I think a lot of the new requirements that have come on to the space have helped open it up a lot.
Since we have a resolution, is it appropriate to take a vote on that resolution?
Yeah, you all can continue to discuss it like you're doing right now as to before I read it.
Yeah, okay.
Once you read it, that sort of becomes an official.
I like what Richard's doing. I really do, because we need to look at how we can increase our returns. And I agree with what you're saying. But with that, we have to say there is also a characteristic of risk mm-hmm. that comes along with
it. Sure.
And that risk is there. And it's something we'd have to accept and live with. And that's what I'm saying. And that part of that risk is potentially maybe bigger than we even understand, because it's not a typical, you know, investment like you put your money in and you're going to hopefully get a return and get it back someday. It's got a lot of verifying variety of attributes. But I like it. I think it would probably be more appropriate for, you know, an individual that would understand it rather than us as trustees for the employee fund. That's my only concern, is we're buying something that is for, you know, as a fiduciary for the employees, and that's the part I'm having a hard time with. But I appreciate you bringing that to us and letting us see it. And, you know, if the committee wants to go for it, then, you know, that's fine.
Okay. John?
I was just going to say one of the, and of course y'all know this, Richard's hit the one. This is a little different than some of them in that it's more diversified. I mean, this particular private equity thing is more diversified than a lot of other private equity things.
Yeah, if you go into just a private equity fund, you're normally going to have like 10 positions.
You have 10 companies or something. This is going to have 10 times that much. So there is more, now to the extent that, you know, diversity theoretically creates more security than otherwise, the
discount is what's going to make good money. You're buying it.
Right.
Well, actually, they don't have to have the discount if they pick the right funds to buy. Well, you know, and they do have primary funds. The secondary fund, they just for providing the liquidity is where they get the discounts.
Well, then that's primarily what they are, is a liquidity vehicle.
Right. Right.
For those funds.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and they've been very successful over years for doing that. Like I said, my client DFW is in it. As a point of disclosure, on a personal basis, I was in Fund 2, Fund 3, and Fund 4.
It's been a good fund, yeah. I can see it being really good with the purchase of discounts. But, I like those.
It offers a significant amount of diversification, which I like. It offers stability to the overall portfolio, which I like. It also offers early investment returns, which I like. Most private equity you go into, you got a significant J curve. You got to wait for 3 years before you start getting a positive return. This gets away from that. And if we're going to go into private equity, I would much prefer a secondary fund to be the first thing on the docket, just so that the J curve effect is mitigated. The next one coming in, if there's a next one, it can have a little bit of a J curve, but it will be at a time where distributions are coming out of a prior investment that will mitigate that J curve.
I just want to point out that if you look at their discount purchase curve, they were 10 to 15%. Then the recession hit, 08 and 09, and that's where they really probably slaughtered them. Because they bought stuff, 60% discounts. They went down to buying things at 40 and 50 cents on the dollar.
Right.
And now it's come back up to about a 10% discount, what it looks like. That return went to those 1 and 2 funds, correct? Or whoever bought that.
Well,
that
it was mostly four.
But it won't be a part of this. In all probability,
it could definitely be part of this, but no, it will not be unless, and I can't predict, unless all of a sudden we have another downturn. When during that downturn they say, "Oh, look at what's there now," because so and so needs cash.
Well, it seemed to me that would be the appropriate time to do something like this. Mm-hmm. Your discounts would be a lot deeper.
Well. I don't disagree with that. The only problem is, are they going to be in the, or who's going to be out there raising money at that point in time?
You have to hit the time.
Yeah,
just
you
right.
have the timing yeah. just right. And, yeah. and it's been fairly well proven out that if you're going to do private equity, you don't want to miss vintage years. You can't really determine ahead of the time what the best vintage year is going to be. So if you're going to do it, you really need to be consistent with the overall plan. This would allow you to pick up maybe 5 or more vintage years just in this particular fund.
Is that because it's going to go buy?
It's going to go buy something that came out before, that may be a vintage year of 2000.
The fund has already been out there running.
Yeah.
Okay. But it doesn't buy any of their previous funds.
No.
That's interesting.
One question I have just for clarification, the way this is written. We would not ever have a larger than $1 million position. I know. In this, or would we, Rich? I'm trying to think because I don't have a dollar in there right now. And our policy says, the target is 5%, so that's roughly $1 million of our portfolio. And I'm just trying to make sure we all understand the cycle of money of inflow into it. I know you're saying at some point you start getting money back, and you're going to want to reinvest, or have calls, but.
In general, if you go back and Commonwealth Fund did a historical study on fund of funds, and what they found out was that in general 50% of a fund of funds is what normally was the peak point of exposure. It could be 70, and it could be less than that, depending on what happens, over the first few years. But usually, you're drawing down, you're making your commitment. They're making capital calls. They'll make all of their commitments in 3 years.
So the commitment we make would last for 3 years.
right?
The yeah, the drawdown of that.
It could be done over 3 years.
And well, not the drawdown, the investment period. There could be continued capital calls after that to fill in as those are needed. So if they make a underlying commitment of $1 million, whatever, they will get capital calls on that $1 million maybe going out for 3 or 4 years.
But what I heard you say, you're saying $1 million, but then I heard $2 million too.
Well, what I'm trying to understand is that something that, I don't know if there's something you sign with Permal or something that it, in effect gives us a cap or whatever our commitment. Whatever
your
our commitment is.
Whatever your commitment is.
Well, that's what I mean. Well, what is our commitment? See, I don't have a number up there for what our commitment is, so what should that
well,
be?
Well, if we're looking for $1 million worth of exposure, it should be $2 million. Could be $1.8 million, I don't know, but I think in general it should be $2 million. Because as they make, you know, capital calls, they're also going to be making distributions back to you.
What happens if we can't make a capital call for whatever reason?
You'll have to ask their lawyers that, but I never run into that.
Well, when you say $2 million is a total commitment, does that mean, though, potentially we could actually have put $2 million in or have $2 million in? You know, we're used to having investments that have a certain number that represents a position at any point in time.
Well, I'm saying understand that the position that at any point in time would most likely, you know, be $1 million. Now, if you've been committed $2 million because you send them $200,000 and then or whatever, and then 6 months later they send you $100,000 back. Now, what have you got out there? You've got $100,000 investment still sitting out there.
But what I'm saying is, if you give them a $2 million commitment, is there a possibility they don't ever send you anything back, and they just keep drawing and run all $2 million?
Yes, there is a possibility.
And I'm just saying that that's more. Now you're getting up maybe at a higher.
We're still within the range.
Within 10%.
We've got to do 10% is our 10%.
10% is the cap.
Is our policy?
As the policy.
Okay.
And 5% is the target, but 10% is the cap. So
if that's the cap, then we can do it.
Yes, you can do it up to 10%. And that's why I say consistent with the investment policy plan, that would allow me and Richard or whatever to do, to go up to the 10%.
The thing that Richard's saying is the cash flows of this investment will get really weird because
they
go back and forth. And it's over 3 years. It just stops at the end of 3 years. Plus, after that, we could fill in some holes. So it's a pretty.
I think now as I look at it, I think the way it's written is probably, it's saying consistent with investment policy of the plan. Yep. I can't go higher than 10%. I can never go higher than 10% as a position that this would have in the deal. And I don't think we ever do that. You never have more than a 10% position. So we just couldn't. Now, we'd have to give them a number. But anyway, we give them, that translates to some number we give them. It's close to $2 million. Obviously, it's right around $2 million.
Right.
That makes sense, or may I?
Well,
are y'all coming? I just want to make sure that if you pass a resolution that I understand and that you'll understand what my parameters are of what to do, and that there's no misunderstanding. And somebody says,
"Nope."
The if you're going to do this resolution, then you probably want to add that dollar amount.
No, I think he's saying.
Well, I don't know. We don't have to because, in effect, I say consistent with the investment policy plan. The investment policy as adopted has a number in it, so I don't need to put it in the resolution because I've, in effect, locked ourselves. I can't exceed that. Yeah. I can't exceed that percentage. So I think we're okay there, to be honest with you. I think we're okay. Okay.
Proceed.
Be it resolved that the Retirement Committee of the Brazos River Authority authorizes the General Manager /CEO to execute an agreement with Permal Private Equity Opportunities 5 LP to provide private equity investment management services to the retirement plan for employees of the Brazos River Authority and Parentheses Plan, with the agreement containing such terms and conditions consistent with the investment policies of the plan and in the best interest of the Brazos River Authority.
We entertain the motion.
So moved.
Jim? Second?
Second.
David. Call for the roll, please. Roll call.
Director Bell?
No.
Director Bennis?
No.
Director Christian?
No.
Mr. Collinsworth?
Yes.
Mr. Forte?
Yes.
Mr. Reles?
Yes.
Okay, we're tied at 3-3.
Your vote.
Chris? Paper, rock, scissors. For signing off.
Yes.
It's not an obvious yes, in that what Laura Lee said last time at the board meeting, and it doesn't pass. We can check with Riley.
Well, what's Chris doing here?
That, yes, that's adventures, you know. A tie does not pass.
A tie is a no.
A tie is a no.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.